I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. How you all doing? I'm Stu Whiffin, one half of the presenting duo of the MMA Fan Podcast. The other half, the better half, Blake Harrison. Hello.
Oh, thanks. That's very kind, the better half. Yeah, that's really lovely.
I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood.
Yeah?
Let me tell you why. I've just recorded a podcast and it was a cracker.
Oh yeah. Who was that with?
No, I don't. I'm just playing. You know who it was because we've just finished the interview. I'll leave you to tell people who we chat to today.
Oh, we've got a fantastic guest on today. UFC veteran turned PFL finalist, one fight away from $1 million. He's one of the two Brits in the PFL finals. We've already had Brendan Loughnane on this show, so you can check that one out. But today, we've got the lightweight finalist, the guy that beat Anthony Pettis twice in about a seven-week
period.
Not once, but twice, in two different ways. What a legend. We've got Stevie Braveheart Ray on the show. And should we just get straight into it? Because it's a cracking chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stevie Ray. Stevie Ray, hello, mate. How are you doing?
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Very good.
We're all good, mate. We're all good. All the better for having you join us today. Stevie, we're going to jump straight in. And I'm always interested to know sort of where the story started and what did, growing up, did you feel like you had to be able to sort of look after yourself, and if so, was you comfortable with conflict? And ultimately, I'm going to sort of lead this into how you ended up finding yourself involved in mixed martial arts. But sort of just tell me a little bit about growing up and what it was like.
Yeah, so I'm from a place called Fife. It's closer to Edinburgh. Yeah, I've lived in Kirkcaldy, Fife, pretty much all my life. I've not got money in my family or anything, so we're brought up in council estate kind of house. Growing up, pretty much had to learn how to fight a little bit because, you know, little bit rough some of the areas where I've lived, and I got bullied for a little bit when I was younger, probably because I was just so cheeky. I probably deserved it a lot, but you know, I'd always be cheeky to the older kids and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I ended up having to have a lot of fights, you know, whether it was defending myself or you know, just getting into fights even before I started MMA. So fighting's been a part of my life since probably like the age of like 10, maybe.
Yeah. And so when did it get to the point where, you know, you're scrapping in the street to thinking, well, hang on a minute, you know, was someone like, look, mate, you could do something really decent with what you know what you've got there. You need to get yourself in a gym. Like, how did that kind of part of the journey start?
So it's quite funny because the guy I had my first ever fight with, like proper fight, it was in my front garden. I was maybe around 10. I must have been 10 years old. Proper, square go, if you like, how we call it, you know, an arranged kind of fight. He was my friend, but, you know, we had had disagreements and we decided to fight. It was then him years later that ended up saying, you know, at the time he was calling it cage fighting. He was saying, I've been doing this cage fighting stuff. You should come along. You'd be really good at it. Because at that time, before I started MMA, I was getting into fights in the street, probably going down the wrong path, hanging around. I was just at that age, like, I was 18. I was 19 when I started MMA, but, you know, from the age of 16 to 19, you know, it was getting to the weekend. It was just a case of, it was living for the weekend, you know, doing whatever it was through the week, and drinking at the weekend and then getting into fights. A lot of the time, you know, it was because my friends had maybe started something and I was kind of known as the one that would fight. So I'd end up being the one that's involved in the fight.
It's funny. It's like it sounds like almost like one of those like action movies from the 80s. It's like my nemesis when I was 10. But then later in life, he guided me down the path to be a true fighter. That's what it sounds like to me. It should be like with synth music in the background, like one of those like 80s action films. That's what I think your life might be, Stevie.
I remember the first time I ever went to training because I'd bumped into this guy, Dean Crichton, his name is. So I'd bumped into him for the second time. I bumped into him every now and again, but I remember the first time he was telling me to come along, try the MMA or the cage fighting. He explained it to me, and I was like, yeah, maybe, you know, I didn't really watch it or anything. I wasn't really ever into watching boxing or fighting, although I was fighting and, you know, getting myself into fights. I never really watched it, but it wasn't until the second time he asked me to go along, I was like, you know what, I'm not doing anything tonight. I'll come along. I'll pick his up. And I remember it was in the place I first started training. It was in the guy's back garden, so it was like it was a private club. He had like a big hut / log cabin in the back garden. You maybe fitted 10 people max, and that'd be pretty crowded. And
it's already sounding very Cobra Kai, by the way. I'm loving this even more. It really plays into the action story. Keep going.
Yeah, it was. Like, it was a private club. We went along. There was Dean, another guy. I think his name is Ian, and myself. And Dean was like, said to my coach at the time, Jim McKelvey, under Edge MMA, he was saying, oh, Jim, I've brought this guy down, introduced me. And Jim was actually a bit annoyed that Dean had brought me along without asking, because it was like a private club. It wasn't a public club. And it was in his back garden. It was just fortunate that the class wasn't busy that night. Because he actually told me I couldn't train. And he said, come back. This must have been around July or August 2009. And he actually said to me, like, come back and like October or something like that, come back when we're taking more people on. And then the class ended up being quiet and he was like, you know what, you can join in. Right day one, I was sparring. I was doing a bit of boxing sparring, MMA sparring. I was rolling, I was in a triangle and I was just fascinated. I just couldn't believe that, I was going to the gym, I was lifting weights, I was known for being a kind of tough guy in the area, because I had to get into fights and stuff. I was fighting at school a lot, and I just couldn't believe that, like, this guy, half the weight of me, was, like, choking me, and able to control me, almost like he was stronger than me, but he was, like, lifting weights. I'd be able to lift way more weights than him, but he was throwing me around and choking me and putting me in arm bars, and that was it. After that, I was hooked. I ended up spewing in the guy's back garden. I ate too late. I ate like pasta 10 minutes before training, you know, trying to trying to scuff it down. And yeah, I spewed in the guy's plant pots. And then I joined back and I was like, oh, I'm good now. Like, he told me just to sit the rest out. I was like, no, I'm good. I can go again. And I think he just liked what he seen, because originally when he said I could join in, he said, you can join in today. And if you like it, you can come back in like October when we're taking people. But by the end of the session, I think he had liked like that I put a lot of hard work in. He said you can come back tomorrow. So it almost was like, you know, when you're watching Karate Kid or what is it, Never Back Down, that movie, Never Back Down. But yeah, and then that was it. That's how I started training every day. And when I first started training, I was actually on a electronic tag. You know, like one of the ankle tags.
Yeah.
That because I'd been getting into trouble for fighting in the street. And yeah, that literally, you know, since that first day changed my kind of personality and just me as a person.
Did the tag make it easier or harder for someone to get you in like a heel hook or something? Is that extra leverage?
Yeah, that's it. I had been training for maybe 4 or 5 months, and so I got my first fight lined up in December 2009. And we were trying to figure out if I could fight with this tag on. I'm like, do I wear wrestling boots and just no kick? Because, you know, back then there was like, I'm sure I had seen somebody wearing wrestling boots before and they just weren't allowed to kick. And then I had to apply to the court to get my tag off to then compete. And when we went to court, me and my lawyer had said, because he wasn't very positive thinking I was going to get it off. I told him it was for back then when we were calling it cage fighting. Yeah, like, can I get my tag off so I can go and fight in a cage? And we decided to, you know, go down and say it was karate. And luckily we did. The judge that eventually let me, you know, that decided to let me get the tag off, he had done karate back in the day, he said. He started with that. Yeah, I know how much discipline it can teach you, and, you know, and I done karate back in the day, and I was like, yes, I'm in with one here.
I can't believe you were contemplating having a fight with a tag on. That sounds absolutely mental. But it's a great thing that the judge realised it. Because it's true, isn't it? Like, you, that's why a lot of us, like, I don't know, you've got kids, haven't you, Stevie? And like, you've got in the background behind you there. Do you put them into martial arts, or will you when they're older? Because my daughter does a little bit of jiu-jitsu now and stuff, and I think it's a great thing for kids to learn a martial art for that kind of like discipline and respect and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, MMA changed not that I was ever a thug or a bad person, but I was just, you know, full of nonsense, like fighting, never thinking about the consequences. You know, and I was an active person. I did like to wrestle and fight a bit, and, you know, just kind of be a typical lad, but yeah, like, it totally changed me. Like, if I didn't start MMA, I maybe would have really went down the wrong path. I feel like it's changed me as a person in so many beneficial ways. I'd like my kids to train. I don't know if I'd like them to compete, just because I know the, you know, the maybe some of the negatives, like getting hit in the head every week or a lot. It's not really good for your brain, but there is a lot of positives, like, you know, discipline and just your physical health, your mental health. Especially the mental health. I feel like, you know, a lot of people that do jiu-jitsu or MMA, like, they use it as a coping mechanism for dealing with, you know, anxiety or depression, or, you know, just having something to do in their life.
I totally agree, Stevie. I mean, like, I'm an old man, but I still try and have a little move about, and I find that 15 minutes of sparring, or even like half hour on the pads, I don't think about anything else. And I think that's so important, that any worries or anxieties you've got, I find that when you're in a gym and if you're sparring or even just in pads, I feel that like it's pure escapism. It's like you can only concentrate what's in front of you at that point. And that's a lovely way to kind of just dial out of day-to-day problems. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I feel like exercise in general is really good for mental health. Like, don't get me wrong, like running on a treadmill and, you know, just going for it, like having a, you know, pushing yourself to a limit sometimes. But what I find so fascinating and better about jiu-jitsu and why, or Muay Thai or striking MMA, whatever, I feel like it's a lot more beneficial for mental health than like going to your typical gym, because you have to concentrate so much. Like, you can go to the gym and run on the treadmill and still be thinking about all the depressing shit going on in life, or and a lot of it's just caused by overthinking. So you can still tend to think about that on a treadmill, or, you know, if you're doing basic stuff like lifting weights, whereas if you go to a jiu-jitsu class and you're having to learn to put your arm here and then put your head here and then put your foot here, like, it's so hard to think about anything else in life other than what you're being taught. And don't get me wrong, there is some days where, you know, you're daydreaming a bit, you're thinking about what you're having for your tea later, rather than concentrating on the technique. But yeah, that's what I think with, you know, jiu-jitsu and MMA. It's so much more, you have to focus, and it's enjoyable more as well, for me anyway.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your career, Stevie, because you're not bad at all this fighting stuff, are you? You're right at all this stuff. You're a Cage Warriors world champion at one point. And one thing I wanted to ask you was, in terms of, like, you talk about the mental side of things and all that, in terms of nerves or anxiety and stuff, what is more nerve-wracking? Fighting for a Cage Warriors world title or doing a debut in the UFC?
To be honest, they were both... My UFC debut was surprisingly not that nerve-wracking. I think...
Is that because it was on short... Because you took it on about 15 days' notice, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did it just give you no time to think about it, and that's why it wasn't so nerve-wracking?
So I think it's a couple of things. Like, one, when I fought in my UFC debut, I thought it would be so much different to Cage Warriors, but because Cage Warriors had the you know, the TV cameras, the lights, the crowd, when I came out to my UFC debut, it felt the same. It just literally felt like I was fighting on Cage Warriors. It didn't feel any different. So that was one. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, it's not any different. But two, in the lead up, when normally, like, when a lot of the anxiety and nerves would probably come in the lead up to the fight, like you said, I had 33 pounds to lose. And
fucking hell.
33 pounds I had, and I only had 15 days notice. It was the day after my birthday. I had just ate pizza and birthday cake, and, you know, I was just kind of enjoying myself. I'd been in Newcastle the week before I got the call, cornering my teammates, and I ended up absolutely hammered. You know, just because I never had any fights coming up. I was just, you know. But yeah, I got the call to make my UFC debut. The guy, I'm not sure who the guy was again, but he was he got injured, and basically my manager said, you know, you've had an opportunity to fight in 2 weeks' time in Poland at lightweight, because we had actually been discussing earlier that day if I could make welterweight, the weight above. And I was like, I don't know, I'm about 85 kilos. Cage Warriors were down the pan at that point. Like, we weren't sure what it was, when, like, they weren't sure what was happening, if it was ever going to, you know, if it was, like, just ending. I was a Cage Warriors champion, and I'd just moved back home. My third child was due to be born April 15th. I had just got a full-time job as a fitness instructor. Or kind of boot camp trainer, and it almost looked like, you know, I was going to maybe just start stop training less and start focusing on, you know, my career and providing for the kids and whatever. And then, that's just opportunity came aboard. But yeah, back to the kind of nerve part, like, I think I was so focused on trying to make weight that I forgot about the fight. Because when my manager gave me the opportunity, I can't make weight lightweight in 2 weeks. There's no chance. And I said, what is it? What's the opportunity? And he told me, UFC Poland, it's a 4-fight contract. And I was like, right. I said, what about if I just take the fight, I miss weight, do I still have a contract after that? And they were like, well, yeah, I'd imagine so. So that was the plan. We took the fight thinking I would miss weight. I would try and make it as close as I could. I'd then have a contract, and hopefully they would understand it's 2 weeks' notice when I did miss weight. And I absolutely starved myself for 2 weeks. Thinking back to what I ate for 2 weeks and how I managed to train twice a day. But yeah, I eventually made the weight.
Wow.
Yeah, and then that was that.
Tell me a little bit about the mental side of things. And you spoke about not having time to be nervous before that fight, but we're always interested to ask fighters about those moments before walking into the venue. I mean, I was at UFC Scotland, and I've never heard a crowd respond. Hearing that crowd singing Stevie fucking Ray was unbelievable. It was, I'm literally getting goosebumps thinking about it now. It was absolutely incredible. For instance, being backstage at that show must have been special. But just in general, what is your procedure in the moments before you get the shout, right, we're going, we're walking out? Have you got any kind of thing that you do, a routine, or are you just quite chilled? Like, what's the sort of process that Stevie Ray does?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before making that walk.
Yeah, so to be honest, I've went through a lot of different kind of things. Obviously, the more experienced I get, I feel like I could deal with it a lot better now. Like, even though I said I wasn't really nervous for my UFC debut, that was maybe the only time I wasn't nervous. I always shit myself before every fight. Like, I'm scared. I'm nervous. That fight, I think, was just, I'm like, you know what? I took it on 2 weeks' notice. Even if I lose, you know, it's like, I could say it was 2 weeks' notice. I never had a fight camp, and then I've got an opportunity after it. But, I used to suffer a lot more. Like, I'd be really, really nervous before a fight, to the point that it would, like, drain me. Because, I mean, I'm not scared of getting hit. I'm not scared. Like, it's just scared of losing, scared of letting people down. And when I was selling, like, when I was fighting in Newcastle and London, and I was selling, like, hundreds of tickets to friends and stuff, and they were coming down, and all the messages, and you're just scared to let everybody down. I feel like, you know, I've read a wee bit of books and stuff, and I feel like I'm able to deal with it a lot better now. Like, I know it's normal. Even though I always knew it was normal, I could just deal with it better now. Like, it's just, it doesn't matter what you kind of do. The nerves are going to come. It's just controlling them at the right time. I read The Fear Bubble, Ant Middleton's book, before I fought Michael Johnson. So that helped me a lot, even in that fight. And he kind of explains, I don't know if you've read The Fear Bubble, but it just explains fear. So he explains fear, and he's saying, like, he says, like, there's four different types of fear. There's fear of confrontation, there's fear of conflict. I can't remember the other two, but pretty much just dealing with fear. And he said that, like, so if you start thinking and dwelling on the fight and being really nervous when you're fighting next week and you're thinking about it all the time, it's going to drain you. By the time you get to the fight, you're going to have used all that energy and it's going to drain you. So he speaks about being in the fear bubble, it's normal, and being at the right time. So, like, what I did before I fought Johnson, I basically said, look, anytime, because it does come up in your head, you know, you go through visions, even you get bad visions, you get, you know, you visualize it in your head, you get knocked out with a head kick, everybody's, it's just clearing that out of your head, just saying, you know what, it's no time to fight yet, there's no point in even thinking about it. And then basically when it's the right time to think about it and get nervous, it's accepting that your body, because your body starts doing this thing, like Cowboy Cerrone spoke about before, like he's hitting pads before a fight and he feels weak and he's no energy and it's no working right, and that's just all these nerves. So there's a certain point on the day of the fight where, like, just everything starts feeling a wee bit different. You start sweating more just sitting doing nothing, and that's your body preparing for, because it knows what's coming. So basically it's about getting nervous at the right time, not getting nervous too early, almost like reassuring yourself. So I remember when I got to the fight day, I was like, I'm not going to get nervous yet and think about that yet, because I'm co-main event when I fought Michael Johnson. The main card's not even started yet. So I'm going to allow myself to start getting nervous. Like, and I can't remember, I chose like a certain fight where I was like, right, now it's time to think about it. Now it's time to get in the zone. There's a reason why I'm feeling nervous. And it's because my body's preparing for battle.
What's the techniques that you're using to stop being nervous? And so when those thoughts are going into your head, say like 5 hours earlier than you want them, what do you do to shut that down?
You just remember yourself, like, why are we going to get nervous now? We've still not even ate our last meal yet. Or we've still not even got to the venue yet. It's almost like remembering yourself, there's no point in being nervous right now. Like, why are we nervous right now? We're not even at the venue.
I don't feel like I'd have that kind of control. I feel like my brain would be going, why? Like, I know it's a very different, it's a very different thing, because, you know, you're doing something that is, you know, technically life threatening, you know, when you going in there and earning your money and doing this kind of job. If I go on stage in front of like a few hundred people, the worst that can happen to me is I fuck up and people think I'm shit at my job. That's kind of the worst thing. It's not like something that could impact me physically or long term or anything like that. But I still will have moments where I'm like, oh, it's press night, the media's all in to review the show or something, and I'm getting nervous. But I kind of feel like my brain would be going, oh, Blake, don't worry, you've got like 4 hours before you're on, you haven't even finished the dress rehearsal yet, so don't get nervous yet. But then my belly would go, no, fuck off, brain, we're getting nervous now, we're doing it now, we're releasing the butterflies now, it's all game over. Like, I don't know, it's in my head, there's got to be more to it than just saying to yourself no.
I think just the experience, like knowing that, you know what, like, so experiencing the whole thing as well, like, because I remember my first fight, just before I explain that, my first fight, I was so fucking scared. There was even thoughts going through my brain, like, maybe I could make something up. Maybe I could say, like, you know, I need to go home for something. Like, all, yeah. Your brain, the chimp in your brain is just trying to find an exit. Like, I didn't realize I would be so nervous. And I'm like, do I even want to do this? Fuck. And then I remember actually literally thinking before I'm fighting, fuck, why did I not stick in at school? Fucking literally before my first fight, I'm like, I should have stuck in more. Like, this is so nervous, like, doing this. And but yeah, like, I think just experience, because there's been times where I've been so nervous for a fight to the point, like the Scotland fight, for example, when I won by knockout, the first one, the first time they came to Scotland, I was so nervous, you know, almost probably the most nervous I've been for a fight, because all my fans were there. They're all wanting me to win. They're all cheering my name. Yeah, I was really, and then I went and knocked the guy out in the first round. And so an experience like that, it almost trains your brain to think, this is all in your head. Like, we were fine the last time. And then even the other side of that is, I've been on the other side of that where I've lost. And I've been beat, or I've even been knocked out. And it's like, it's not the end of the world. So I feel like I used to put too much pressure on myself, thinking this is life or death. And to a point, you know, it is a very challenging thing to do, and it is a fight. But it's not anywhere near as scary as going to, like, battle. Like, these soldiers that are going to battle, they literally might not come back. They might die. They might get shot. So it's almost like saying to yourself, worst case scenario, you're going to lose. You're going to wake up again tomorrow. You're going to go back to your family. You go eat. You go shower. It's no the end of the world. There's a lot more people worse off. And it's just about learning, especially at the amateur stage. And, you know, I try and tell that to people as well. You know, when they're fighting amateur, and obviously if somebody's just lost, and even pro, I mean, it doesn't matter really sometimes what somebody says to you after a loss. You're devastated and stuff, but it's true. It's just, you know what, it could be worse. You live to fight another day, and think about the positives. And that's where it comes down to, again, I'm totally shouting out Anne Bitherland, because I liked his Fear Bubble book that much that I read his Zero Negativity book. That's the last book I've read. And that's honestly changed my mentality in terms of just thinking positive. And yes, no matter what happens in life, there's two ways of thinking about something. You can think of all the negatives and be depressed, or you can think positive and just feel better. And sometimes it's very hard when you're in such a negative mindset or whatever to see any of the positives. I've been there, but I'm so negative and people try to tell me the positives, and sometimes it's like you're stuck in this trap. Yeah. But yeah, it's just thinking of the positives. Like, so I know that's kind of a long answer, but it's...
No, but it's great.
It's worst case scenario. You think of the positives, basically. Like, if you go out and you lose, it's rubbish, you lost, but what's the positives? One, you're going to learn, why did you lose? You need to go and work on this, this, and this. The other positives, I'm going home to my kids. I'm obviously, when you're professional, you're getting a wage for win or lose, usually. So you've earned money. It's just thinking of all the positives, really, rather than the negatives, because, like I said, if you think of all the negatives, it can really put you into a depressing state.
One of the things that, after the Johnson fight, we want to sort of touch on you leaving the UFC. And I've read different things, and I'd just like to hear from you, because obviously the story has an incredible positive outcome in the end. But at that point, we'd like to sort of know where you was at, because it was all looking pretty decent, and then all of a sudden, you wasn't no longer in the UFC. Like, can you explain to Stevie what happened there?
Yeah, so I mean, I had 11 fights in the UFC altogether. I won 7 and lost 4. It's a pretty decent record. I mean, UFC is the Champions League of MMA. It's pretty hard to, you know, stay undefeated. Very rarely has anyone stayed undefeated. You know, there's the exception of Khabib and, you know, a couple of others. But, yeah, it's like the top league. I was doing pretty well. 7 wins, 4 losses. Beat some good names, lost by some good names as well. My last win, Michael Johnson, was probably at the time the biggest win in my career. I remember my manager, who's still my manager, Ali Abdelaziz, he came to me. So I had signed a fight to fight Mark Diakese. We were due to fight UFC London. And I was getting bothered with my knee. This has been for years. Jess and Ayari fight, Cajun Johnson fight, and even the Michael Johnson fight. Like, I almost pulled out against Johnson. So, yeah, it got to the point. I was early in the camp. You know, I seen Mark was training his arse off, obviously. I seen it online, he's training. I'm sitting at home on my couch, icing my knee for days. And I tried to, obviously, then ice my knee, go back to training. I would train, it would swell up huge, back to ice and blah, blah, blah. So I pulled out for the first time in my career, pulled out of the fight. Then the whole show got cancelled because of COVID. So I should have just stuck around. I would have got paid. I heard they all got their show money. But, no, God. But, yeah, then all of a sudden, like, you know, my manager was saying about signing somewhere else. And I wasn't really up for it. I was like, well, no, because after the Johnson fight, I actually signed a new 4-fight contract after that. So I hadn't even fought any of the fights yet. And he was just saying,
so why were you being suggested to potentially sign somewhere else if you had a 4-fight deal with the UFC? What was the logic behind that? Was there talk behind the scenes of other organizations wanting you and there's more money?
I was so confused at the time where I didn't really understand what was going on. But basically, the UFC doctor, one of the doctors, I think it was Jeff Davidson, didn't believe that my knee was in any way fit to fight, whether he meant ever fight again or fight in the next. There was no short-term fix for my knee. He basically said, my knee is fucked.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And that there wouldn't be a short-term fix. The UFC asked me to go and get orthopedic clearance when I was asking for a fight. This is when Fight Island and all that was going on. So I went and got orthopedic clearance. I went and seen an orthopedic. He basically said, your knee is in a pretty shit way. It is very damaged, but I don't see why you couldn't fight. Like, basically saying, my knees, I could still fight, but I've not got a great knee, basically. And it's just arthritis and cartilage problems. It's not like I've got an ACL tear or anything like that where it's unstable. It's just, you know, painful at the time anyway. So I got the orthopedic clearance and I didn't know if they were shocked that I got it so quick and gave them it. Because, I mean, I'm being like a third wheel a wee bit. Like, I'm only hearing what my manager's saying, and then obviously my manager's hearing what the UFC's saying. I'm not speaking directly to them, but yeah, Ali was just saying maybe about signing with Bellator, and I'm like, and I was saying, like, why? Why sign? Like, I've got a 4-fight contract, and I think he was scared to tell me, like, the UFC want to get rid of you. That's what I think he was scared to tell me. Like, he wasn't what he, like, just come out with it. Like, the UFC are wanting to get rid of you because the UFC doctor has advised that your knee is fucked. So that was basically the script. I spoke to Shelby later after this whole thing, and he explained to me as well, like, it wasn't them that wanted to get rid of me. It was the UFC doctor that advised my knee isn't in a good position. So yeah, that's pretty much what happened. I mean, then after back and forth, and I was kind of like no wanting to do it, but then I was almost like, I felt like I was told, look, there's not a choice here. That it seemed like there was a choice to start with, but I kept saying, oh, I'll stay with the UFC, I've signed a new 4-fight contract, it started getting to the point where I'm like, it's kind of no a choice. Like, you're going to go as a free agent, or they're going to cut you and tell everybody why. And then you wouldn't be able to sign with anybody else either. So I was like, right, it's better to go as a free agent then, because they'll go cut me anyway. I'll try and sign with another company. So that was the plan. Obviously, bad timing. COVID was here. Fucking the world was falling to bits. Everything was getting shut down. That's why it took so long to... And then after a bit of time, my knee was bad at that time. So my knee was all swollen still. I still obviously had the injury. And I was like, I remember I pulled over at the side of the road and I was like, fuck it, I'm announcing to everybody that I'm retired from MMA. And I was almost just hurt. You know, I was hurt. I'd worked my arse off for the past 10 years plus to then win the biggest fight in my life or career, to then for that to happen. So I was a bit pissed off with the sport, if you like. I was just like, I was just like, you know what? Fuck MMA.
And understandably, that's, you know, you have an emotional reaction to that. You work so hard, you get one of the biggest wins of your career, 4-fight deal, the knee goes, COVID happens. That's completely understandable that you have that reaction. But as we alluded to earlier, it seems to have worked out pretty well for you now, because you decided to end up going to the PFL. And from the outside looking in, it is, to me, it's like a Rocky story. It's like you've got a situation where, you know, you sort of retired, you had the knee troubles, you didn't fight for the best part of 2.5 years or 3 years or whatever it was. And then you come back, your first fight, you unfortunately lost that fight. And then you fight in Anthony Pettis in your second fight, who, you know, probably the biggest name that you'd fought to date.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. I mean, the guy that was on the Wheaties box, the guy that was a former UFC lightweight champion. This was a huge moment. And everyone, I think, was going, oh, well, Pettis is going to win this fight, isn't he? And then you come along and do that unbelievable, was it a modified twister submission that everyone goes fucking nuts for? And not only do you beat him in the second round, because with the point system in the PFL, you get through to the semifinals, you then have to fight Anthony Pettis again 6 weeks later. And again, people are either going, oh, Pettis will get his revenge, that was like a lucky sub or whatever it was. It's such a unique thing. And then you beat him again in a completely different way. And now you're one fight away, one win away from $1 million. It's a Rocky story. It's a great thing. Did are you aware of how much of a great story it is for the fans to watch this happen to you? Hello.
Yeah, the family's just came home, so chaos. I'll be 5 minutes. So I mean, sometimes it still feels a bit surreal, and because of, you know, where I was at before even signing with the PFL, like, I was doubting, like, because even though I retired in an emotional kind of way, it then started getting to the point where I'm like, I don't know if I will ever fight again. It's been that long.
Yeah.
And because after I retired, I remember, you know, a couple of weeks gone by, and me then figured, like, fuck, like, what am I going to do now? I've just retired from MMA. The thing I've done for the last 10 years, I'm fucking no good at anything else. I'm not wanting to go back to the building site and being a labourer. And yeah, I was almost a bit lost. I'm like, what the fuck will I do with my life? You know, I had coaching, but it's not quite the same. In terms of thrill and then money and stuff as well. So then, like you said, I had my comeback fight, and, you know, I made some mistakes. I feel like the ring rust played a big part in that. Props to Martinez for getting the win, obviously. But yeah, I made a lot of mistakes and kind of gave the fight away. To then get to get better, you know. Like, I knew I was good enough to get the win, and I hit him with that twister that not a lot of people had seen. It went a wee bit viral. It's a bit surreal sometimes, you know, because I was quite a fan of, you know, Pettis as well. Like, I've watched him in the UFC. He's been the champion. I remember even walking to the arena. Like, this is the second time as well. That's how much, like, that's how famous he is. Walking to Madison Square Garden, literally when we were getting picked up, walking to the arena to go and fight, I remember looking at him still thinking, like, that's Anthony Pettis. Fucking hell! Like, he was wearing his vest that we got for the New York Lakers, the New York Yankees basketball top. He had the shades on, and yeah, he looked pretty cool, to be fair. Rich kid. I remember looking at him the second time, like, just thinking, like, fucking, like, a bit stunned that, you know, it's still like walking to that. And then the other part of my brain's like, shut the fuck up, you're about to go and fight him. You know, get that mindset. But it literally worked. Yeah, it's like worked out the best for me. The first fight, yeah, it would have been good to win that as well, but it's almost like even a wee bit even cooler, the fact that I needed to win, I needed the stoppage, I got the stoppage. It was went a wee bit viral. You know, then, like you said, immediate rematch. Everybody thinks maybe it was a bit of luck. And then I proved everybody again.
Yeah.
You know, I beat them by decision. And now I'm, like you said, my next fight is for $1 million.
I mean, it's a phenomenal story, mate. And look, your family's just come back. We don't want to keep you. I've really loved chatting to you. But I have to ask you before you go, if it's all right, you've got Olivier Aubin-Mercier in the final. I don't know when and where that's happening. I'm assuming you know. I don't know if you can say when and where that's happening. But OAM is a former UFC fighter as well. How do you feel you match up to Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and how's that fight going to go in your opinion?
I'm sure the fight is November 25th. I'm pretty sure that's, you know, it's out there. Like, you could probably find that that's where it is.
Yep.
Where it is, I'm still not sure where it is. It was meant to be Vegas, but they've changed it. And we're waiting to hear back where it is. So hopefully we hear soon, because that, me, like an idiot, went and booked the wife flights to Vegas for that day. And now they've changed it. And it was non-refundable flights. I've had to try and request a refund. But because I looked at changing it and stuff, and I did think it just seemed too much hassle. And the destination where I think it's maybe going to be wasn't giving me the option to change it to that place. So it's somewhere in America, but still waiting to hear exactly where it will be. It's 11 weeks tomorrow, so 11 weeks away. I feel like we're quite similar. Like, I think he had 11 or 12 fights in the UFC. Maybe 11. One was the Ultimate Fighter, so 11 or 12. I've not exactly counted, but. I'm the same. I had 11 fights in the UFC as well. We're both southpaws. We both have big left hands. We're both pretty decent sized for the weight. Both strong. Both decent wrestlers. I feel like we're actually pretty similar. I don't know. I've obviously been biased, but I just think nobody wants it as much as me or needs it as much as me. He's not got four kids to feed. I'm going to train my arse off for the next 11 weeks, and you know what, if I lose, then he's definitely the better man, because I'm going to train like there's no tomorrow. I'm going to put everything into this. For the past 12 years of my life, the ups, the downs, the everything, it's all for this one night. So you better believe that everybody's going to see the best Stevie Ray ever. I'll be obviously coming to, you know, take his arm, take his head, his leg, anything. I'll be doing whatever I can to get the win.
Nice, well, can't wait to see it, mate. Absolutely. Cannot wait. Best of luck on November 25th, did you say?
November 25th. I think I'm pretty sure it's November 25th, somewhere in America.
Nice.
Yeah, man.
Nice. Lovely. Well, yeah, can't wait, mate. Look, we'll let you get to your family. We know that they've just walked in and we've taken up loads of your time.
That was the wife just saying she's away to walk the dog, and I think that was her trying to get my attention to say.
I did meet your wife at the PFL London, so say hi from me. Hello, nice to see you again. How are you doing?
Oh, starstruck.
Well, so was I. You came over and said hi. I was like, can I say hi to Stevie, please?
Stephen, I was like, you said that I can get a picture, but only if you can get a picture with him.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I thought I was getting ditched with the kids there, but she's taking them well, so all good.
Lovely. Well, as I say, we've taken up loads of your time. I could speak to you all day, Stevie. It's been great, and best of luck in the PFL final.
Absolutely,
one fight,
mate,
away from $1 million. It's going to be great.
I appreciate it for having you on. It was good chatting with you guys.
Absolutely. You too.
It,
well, lovely. When you win and when you're a millionaire, you'll come back on.
Yeah, that's it. Definitely, man.
That's it. Nice one,
lovely.
Man.
Thanks.
All the
Thanks
best.
Thanks, so Stevie.
Cheers,
see you, man.
See you later, boys. Bye.
There you go, Stevie Ray. What an absolute diamond.
Absolutely brilliant. He gave such great answers. Do you know what? I've got like a whole page full of questions that I didn't get to ask, but his family came in and I was like, oh, we have taken up loads of your time already. I probably told him it was like a half an hour chat and we had it for about 45 minutes. But so I could have asked him loads of more questions, but he gave such insightful, detailed answers. I absolutely loved it. And as I say, I could have spoke to him for longer. Just such a lovely, down-to-earth guy. The way he spoke about the anxiety he can get before fights, but then how he deals with that, giving Ant Middleton a bunch of shout-outs on this podcast. Are we sponsored by Ant Middleton? Can we get that? Can that work?
That was the personal highlight for me. When he was talking about compartmentalising like the anxiety and the fear and parking it up, your face like just screamed, what?
Yeah. How do you do that?
That's why he does what he does, and that's what we do what we do. We can't do that.
Absolutely. Isn't fear just this like tsunami of emotions that you can't do anything to stop? No, it can be stopped. Oh, okay, fair enough, mate. You just need to have
a
strong
this,
brain.
Like, this knee-jerk reaction, it literally just throws me into the fetal position on the floor. And on a good day, I won't wet myself. Like, that's how
that's
I deal with it.
That's it. That'd be me. But no, man, that was super, super interesting. And I wanted him to ask him more questions about, like, his family. Like, 4 kids and being a fighter. Like, what is that like? How's that? But, I mean, you know, the main things are he gave some phenomenal answers. It was a great chat. And God, I really, really hope he wins. I think Olivier Aubin-Mercier seems like a lovely man, but we know Stevie Ray's a great guy. Yeah. Really great family guy. He's got,
we want the Rocky story.
We want the Rocky story, and it really is. And if you haven't caught any of his action on the PFL, you can go back and look at it. It's on the Channel 4 Sport YouTube page, I think, or 4OD or any of those kind of things, and you can find like the PFL stuff. He was so brilliant in those two fights against Anthony Pettis. They were absolutely phenomenal. So
stoppage if you haven't seen it. Stoppage. Like, I watched it live and I remember thinking, what has he just done there?
Yeah.
Like, I'd never seen anything like that before. It was wonderful. Yeah. And, so go check that out if you get a chance. Also, while you're over on that 4OD, you can see Mr. Harrison talking all things PFL with former guest Dan Hardy.
Yes, you can. You can see that. But, I mean, more importantly, go and watch that modified twister. And even that three-round fight that Stevie had with Anthony Pettis as well. I mean, it's just such a great story. I get such a feel-good vibe from it.
Yeah.
I think, it's just lovely to see someone like Stevie who's come through that adversity. The UFC, as he said, effectively wanting to cut him because a doctor had given them bad information. Because let's be honest, the UFC must be looking at that now and going, hang on a minute, we cut this guy after he had his best win in the UFC, and now
he's one fight away from being the PFL champion. That's, they've got to be frustrated about that. But yeah, someone has dropped the ball there. So yeah, but good for Stevie. I don't think he's complaining. He's having more hype. He headlined Madison Square Garden, for goodness sake. He's probably on way more money than what he was in the UFC. And as we said, one fight away from $1 million. So, God, I really hope he wins and then we get him back on the show. And Brendan. Brendan as well. It'd be great to have two British PFL champions. So, yeah, best of luck to them in November.
Absolutely. Give us a follow. We're on all the social media platforms. If you do that, you can keep up to speed. We put some, like, when we see fight announcements and that, we'll generally post that up there, and we'll share a lot of news in our stories as well, so you can kind of get a little fix of all things that are happening in the world of MMA. And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, you're late to the party, but don't worry, you're more than welcome. You've missed a lot though, and as Blake mentioned, we've had Brendan on the show. Go check that episode out. Fellow Scott, we've had Paul Craig on, we've had Jojo Wood, and we've had a real who's who of British UFC and mixed martial arts, other mixed martial arts organisations, fighters on as well. And not just fighters, we've had amazing chats with former fighters like Dan Hardy, Mike Bisping, and people that work, you know, in the world of MMA. People like Mark Goddard, we chat about this episode a lot because it's a lovely snapshot behind the curtain of MMA to find out what it's like, you know, being a third man in the octagon. Highly recommend that episode. And yeah, we've had some absolute superstars on as well. Alexander Volkanovski, is he now the pound for pound? He's got to be, right?
He's now the pound for pound guy since Leon beat Usman. Volkanovski's the pound for pound guy. You mentioned Dan Hardy there. I mean, Arnold Allen, Paddy Pimblett, Molly McCann. And we've said this on a few episodes. If you go back to find the foot, like, so Molly and Paddy, I think, have both been on about three times now. But if you go back to those first episodes that we had with Molly, with Paddy, and then the episodes... Nathaniel Wood's another one. If you go back to those, you get the kind of chats that we had today that are kind of about their career and what drove them to MMA and what drives them still to become champions and things like that, and insight into their mindset and stuff. And that's the kind of thing that hopefully you get more on this show than maybe on some others, because there's a lot of other shows out there that will be talking about what's the fight you've just had, what's the upcoming fight. But we like to try and get a bit more personal so that you get a bit more of a detailed look at who your favourite fighters are, and you can hopefully, if there's someone that you didn't know too well, you know them a lot more after listening to them on our show. So do go through the back catalogues and check out our chats with the likes of Arnold Allen, Volkanovski, and
Tyron Woodley.
Tyron Woodley as well, we mentioned there. And there's so many now. It's been a who's who of British and world MMA, and when you think of America as well, we've had people like Derek Brunson on the show as well, and we've got an episode with
Angela
Josh
Hill.
Angela Hill is another one. Ricky Simone, and we've got one with Josh Emmett as well at the moment, so do check those out.
Absolutely. We'll be back next time. See you soon.
Bye.